Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Sorry to let you down. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Haven't had one of these shows in a little while. Excited to have these two back on the show. It's the Super Manga Pals from Manga Comics, Manga.com, and writer for Publishers Weekly. It's Deb Aoki. Hey, Deb.
Hey, Zach.
And you know her from Anime News Network. Roughly 50% of our reviews, I think, are written by her at this point. she also now writes Right Turn Only. It's Rebecca Silverman.
Hey, hello.
Thanks for coming on, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me back.
So before we get into manga, I wanted to talk about this because it's been kind of a big week for stuff from Japanese pop culture that crossed over into mainstream American success. First, the Godzilla movie came out and was the biggest opening, I think, in May. I don't know.
I think for the year.
Yeah, for the year for sure. It broke a couple of different records, but it opened about 90 plus million. Was Godzilla, and I actually liked it a lot. Did either of you see it?
No, I did.
I haven't seen it yet.
I'm sorry. Don't answer at the same time. Deb, did you see this?
I did. It was great.
Okay, and Rebecca, you didn't check it out yet.
I did not see it yet. No.
Not a fan of the monster movie or.
I like monster movies, but it's been a lot of other stuff going on. I just haven't had a chance to get out of the house, really.
Yeah, well, you know how it goes. But so, Deb, you liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, you know, it has the same problems as every other Godzilla movie, which is...
which
90 minutes of total bullshit human stuff that you don't care about at all. And then about a half an hour of really, really great... monster shit that is, you know, in this movie in particular, like, they finally had the budget to pull it off, so making you wait that long for the monster stuff, you know, you got the payoff. Like, I felt like...
Oh, sure, there was a payoff.
Yeah, it was a pretty good payoff. But from the perspective of people who spend, you know, a lot of our time mired in a Western response to Japanese pop culture... that movie being as big as it is, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot more Godzilla movies as a result, but I'm sort of curious if you think it's going to have any impact on other areas of Japanese pop culture, because it could, you know, that could trigger a whole bunch of stuff being put into production.
I don't know. I mean, like, I guess, you know, after so many horrible adaptations, you know, including horrible Godzilla adaptations, I mean, Dragon Ball comes to mind. There's a few others. I kept thinking, you know, when they announced it, please don't suck, please don't suck, please don't suck. Oh, my God, please don't suck.
Yeah.
So I was really happy that it didn't suck. Did you go to the Godzilla experience last year at Comic-Con?
I didn't go to Comic-Con last year.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, they took over a whole building, and they did, like, a big... installation, like kind of like an interactive experience.
Yeah, I saw the video of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I thought it was really neat, and it was really respectful of, you know, the origins of the franchise. It was well orchestrated. And it, when you walked into the last room and you actually saw Godzilla walk past this window, you got a sense of like, whoa, they're making this Godzilla really big. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of exciting. I thought that was a nice, it gave me a little bit of hope that this would be a good adaptation.
Well, a good version of it anyway. I don't know if I would call it an adaptation of anything. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Like there's a popular series of books or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. It is its own story.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, personally, I was just happy that they didn't go with the just Godzilla thing. They're like, okay, well, he's got to fight some monsters. Because that's what you want to see. Like, you know, movies where Godzilla is the quote-unquote bad guy, those are kind of the most boring ones. Like, you want more than one monster in there. And I was hoping that, like, this being such a huge success, they've already announced a sequel, that it's going to be, like, just throw in more monsters. Because you can't go wrong with that. You can't. It's not like a Batman movie where more than one villain in the movie sucks. You just want more monsters. So I'm sort of hoping for that. But, yeah, I'm curious if, like, you know, if this being such a big success is going to get... You know, maybe Warner will stop dragging their feet on that Akira movie. You know, maybe. Who knows? You know, they're like, well, post-apocalyptic, kind of from Japan, you know. Hey, well, why not, you know?
Hey, did you see that Akira fan trailer?
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
You're not as thrilled.
No, I think the fan movie stuff, it gets attention and people say it's great. Because fans made it, and therefore apparently you're also not allowed to talk about how these people don't know how to block a scene or light a scene or script anything or do any kind of decent editing, or this looks like garbage from every angle. But if it's, oh, fans made it, suddenly you have to be nice to it or you're the bad guy. I fucking hate that.
Oh, no, I mean, I think that's legit. I just thought it was an interesting counterpart to what the original plan for Akira was, to, you know, kind of, let's be blunt, whitewash it a lot. And this was much more, a little bit closer to the Japanese version.
Yeah, but I don't really have, it's, you know, you can't erase or burn every copy of the existing adaptation of Akira, which a lot of people think is garbage compared to the comics already.
Well, that's true, yes.
So, you know, like, just give it, I'm all for trying something new. If you fail, that's fine. Just try something else, you know. I wasn't opposed to the changes that they were going to make. Again,
really?
The original exists, and that movie coming out would have meant much more widespread and more affordable reprints of the comics anyway. So, you know, it would have been fine. But I'm just wondering if we're going to see a resurgence of that kind of thing. But the other thing that happened was Viz announced Sailor Moon.
That was big.
Yeah, which is a big, big deal. That you can go over to ANN right now and check out or rather, my exclusive interview with them.
Which was terrific.
Runs down all the details. That was a big announcement. We sat on it for a long time. So it was really, really good. Like, I conducted that interview in, like, April. Like,
really? Yeah, that long they've been on this?
Yeah.
Wow. I think they mentioned something like they had just heard that on the day of the panel that they got the rights to Crystal as well.
That's how close it was. Yeah, I got the email saying, hey, we also are doing this, so make sure you mention it. I'm like, because originally in that interview, there were lines in there that were like, so can you say anything? Are you guys looking into the new one? Obviously, there's a new one coming out. Are you excited about the new one? And they're like, oh, it's too early to say anything about that. It's being treated as a separate production. It's not the same people. You know, that's different and separate, and we can't talk about it right now. Then, of course, an hour before, we're sitting here waiting for them to make the announcement so we can post everything. They're like, oh, we also are doing this. I was like, fuck, I'm going to go in and take out all those lines. Yeah, that was fun.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, it was fine. I mean, that was huge news. Huge, probably the biggest announcement of the year, I would say.
I would say so, too.
I'd agree. Of the last several years, maybe.
Well, that was definitely the great white whale of anime licensing, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I don't think that's an exaggeration. You know, and it's funny because, like, a lot of people are talking about that announcement as though it's not that, you know, the excitement is there and everything, but people, I think, maybe have forgotten what a huge impact that show had. Mm. Like, it was massive in the 90s, and it defined anime fandom, and even just, I don't know, nostalgia for a lot of people. Millions of kids saw that, and it was a big success at the time.
Rebecca, were you a Sailor Moon girl?
Oh, I was a major Moonie. My sisters and I played Sailor Moon croquet, where you had to pick the color of your favorite Sailor Scout and shout her attack before you hit the ball.
Whoa.
Yeah, we were pretty serious. I still have a Sailor Pluto costume somewhere that my sister made me out of shower curtains.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah, it was a sad thing. I actually even worked it into my master's dissertation. So it was a big deal, you might say.
Nice. How did you feel about the announcement?
I was pretty excited. I think I'll probably miss somewhere in my heart the old dub with weird British Luna and the Negaverse. But it'll be exciting to hear the new one, I think. And certainly that Stars is finally going to get aired is really exciting.
Oh, can you explain what Stars is, by the way? Because
yes.
I've heard it. I mean, as a fan, I'd love to hear it from you.
Sailor Stars is the last season of the Sailor Moon anime. And that features the semi-infamous Sailor Starlights, who are male when they are not transformed, and they turn into females when they go through their transformation process. Or at least that was my understanding. They could have been cross-dressing. I got a little confused at that point. And they have wonderful attacks like Star Gentle Uterus. Yeah. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that one come over. It's also the darkest season by far. And in the manga, people who are familiar with the end of it, it gets really very grim. And that certainly is the case with the anime as well, though perhaps not to the same degree.
Was it ever aired in America?
No.
No, it was not.
It's never been made legally available here, ever. Like, Toei wouldn't license it to Genion for whatever reason.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it's famously not available. So the fact that they're putting it out is a really, really big deal. You know, as they said in the interview, like, well, we hope, you know, people buy the entire release and not just the last season or just the first season or whatever. But that sort of being the cherry on top, I think makes it a more compelling reason to collect the entire thing for a lot of folks.
Right.
Just so you have it all. But, you know, like, I watched plenty of Sailor Moon. Yeah, even back in my, you know, back in college when I was doing tape trading and stuff, like, Sailor Moon S was a big deal to have all of that because people always wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I ran out of patience for it. I don't think I got all the way through Super S.
Why is that? I mean, run out of patience, what do you mean? Was you couldn't find it, or it was boring? Or?
It was so repetitive. Like, so repetitive. And, like, you know, the chief reason I was watching it was because it was Akunihiko Ikuhara before he did Utena.
Ah.
And I was a huge fan of Utena at the time. And still am. And I was like, well, I should see where this guy's chops came from. So I started watching Sailor Moon, and, you know, I had it on in the background a lot, but once Super S came around, I was like, man, I'm done with this. Like, it is the same fucking thing in every single episode. But, you know, the show was Monster of the Week for most of its runtime.
And Super S really was the weakest season, I thought, which is interesting because I thought in the manga that was some of the best stuff, but I don't know, something about Chibiusa in the anime just didn't translate well.
Well, I think once it got to the pilot, the first episode of Super S, they're like, oh, there's this evil force that's crystallizing people's souls, and it's a different kind of bauble, and every single episode you have to solve this girl's problem and give her bauble back, and it's the same fucking thing. It's the same show, just with, like, slightly different trappings, and I'm like, okay, I'm done. I'm done here. But I'm curious to see that last season when it comes out. But mostly, someone who's interested in this from a business standpoint, it's a really big deal that this is coming back out. I think Charlene over at Viz equated it to, like, if Dragon Ball is the king on the chessboard, Sailor Moon is the queen on that chessboard. That's totally true.
I'd agree.
In terms of commercial interest, that is completely true. So it'll mean a lot of prosperity for Viz, which means hopefully we'll get even riskier choices from them, and they'll do even crazier stuff, and we'll get even, you know, more niche titles, because they can afford to take those risks, which any time something like this happens to a company and they're going to be flush with cash, like Funimation is about to make a lot of money on Attack on Titan. Great, maybe this means they'll take some risks, you know, like that's what you want. That's what you want to happen.
Right. I mean, risks meaning, you know, this is stuff that they personally like, and they, you know, but they is not a sure thing. I mean, that happened. Remember when Viz was flush with Pokemon money, they did, I don't know, Pulp magazine, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's when they felt safe to do that. So, I mean, overall, I think, you know, this development is a wonderful thing. And, I mean, we're seeing the results of, you know, several generations. The first generation of Sailor Moon fans now becoming creators themselves, and the, you know, the prospect of introducing this to a new generation of fans, I think is really wonderful.
I agree. And it sounds like Rebecca is maybe the most excited.
Maybe just a little.
I think it's great. No, I mean, Sailor Moon came out one generation after me. Like, my deep love of manga started in the 80s, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like 70s and 80s. So, and so by the time Sailor Moon came out, I was already in college. And so it was a little too, I don't know, too young for me.
Yeah, that stands to reason.
But, you know, now that I'm able to watch the anime now and enjoy it with fresh eyes and, you know, kind of be introduced to it, you know, completely from ground zero almost. And it's kind of exciting because, you know, one thing that has always really kind of, you know, in the back of my mind bothered me a little bit about the adaptation of the Sailor Moon anime is how it was adapted for American audiences. Uh-huh. You know, the part where, you know, famously, Sailor Uranus and Sailor Neptune were cousins.
Yes.
So, but, you know, I was reflecting on that a little bit and thought, you know, now that, you know, it's, you know, compared to the 90s when this first came out, you know, I mean, gay marriage and people is becoming legal in several states. It's much more normalized, gay relationships. And I think, you know, maybe that's also part of it too, that they feel they don't, it's a different climate now.
Well, that also begs the question, they changed one of the four generals in the first season of Sailor Moon into a woman so that the romance between he and another general would be acceptable to American audiences. So I'll be curious to see if they'd leave Zoisite as a man now when they redo it.
I think they answered that question already. I believe they said something to the effect of the voice actress is a woman. The character is supposed to be female, so yeah, it's going to be a woman.
Yeah.
Now, okay, this is just a theory on my behalf, but they basically said that the Deke dub, the original American version, has effectively been disappeared. It is not available. You cannot relicense it. You can't bring it back from the grave. Now, never say never, but Naoko Takeuchi has an infamously tight leash on the Sailor Moon franchise at this point.
Right.
She doesn't let anything happen that she doesn't want to happen.
Mm.
I'm kind of convinced that that Deke dub is partially responsible for the reason that the show was so infamously unavailable for so long here, that she just hated it a whole lot. And, you know, it's the same. Well, that exact same thing famously happened with Hayao Miyazaki in Warriors of the Wind. He saw that and said, okay, you don't get my movies ever again.
Wow.
And then Disney changed his mind. So something changed and she opened up to the idea again. But I'm convinced that that Deke dub will never be made available here ever again. And
not unreasonable.
And that she is... they said in the interview, we have to send a lot of this stuff to the creator for approval. So she's, you know, any decision that's currently being made with the Sailor Moon franchise, she is personally approving. I think, you know, that's sort of a famous thing about her is that, you know, she keeps a really tight leash on that. So any changes that you see, like, oh, well, are they going to make this character male or female? Like, all of those decisions will be deferred to her. And you can't, you know, if she makes that choice, you can't say, like, oh, well, it should be this way. It's like, it's her fucking comic. Like, if she says it's this way, then it's fucking that way. Like, you know? It doesn't belong to the fans or anything.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, there was a fan who went on an incredible hissy fit about, I want my Serena back. I don't want them to be gay. And, you know, I want it the way I remember it. And it's like, you could pay a lot of money and buy the originals, you know, the last release. You know, and nobody cares if you boycott the current. Because you're the only one.
Yeah, it's going to be you and a few hundred other people who are weird about it. Like,
there are?
I would imagine there have to be. Anything on the internet, you know, that's super strange like that, you're going to find one ringleader, and then there's going to be, like, maybe 50 to 100 other people who are just crazy enough to follow it. And that's about it, you know? But if those people want that, it's available. You can pirate it, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure you
I still have
it.
My recorded off TV VHSs.
Yeah, right, exactly. So it's not like it's being disappeared to the point where you will never be able to see it again, even through illicit means. It's just no one's going to put it on DVD for you because the person who made it and the people in charge of it don't want that version out there, and that's fine.
Frankly, the
show is so different. Like, people were talking like, oh, well, just make it an alternate audio track. No, it's a different show. Like, yeah. It's completely re-edited from the ground up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can't just make it an alternate audio track. It's a totally different show.
Are people asking for that?
Yeah, they were. Of course they were.
Oh, that is so sad.
But it's exciting. It's coming back out. And I hope that the new show is good. I really do.
I do, too. I mean, I was looking at the old show, and, you know, part of me wondered why they decided to do a remake, and then I watched the old show, and it's like, oh, this is like when I saw the old Tron. It's not as good. The special effects are not as cutting edge as I remember them.
It's old. It's an old show. It's an old-ass 90s TV show. Like,
and that's okay. It has its charm, but, you know, I can understand why they want to reboot the franchise and make it fresh. I think it's great. I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, with this new release that, you know, she'll, like you said, Takeuchi sensei is very, very, minds her property quite well, that they'll make it available on digital, the manga available on digital. Cause Kodansha has been saying famously for the last maybe 2 years, sorry, it's not available digitally. Not happening. And I'd like to see it, you know, get into as many hands as possible because, you know, it, you know, like it or not, it is rare that comics like this for girls are available, you know?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, so Rebecca, I got to ask, like, did you check out the Hulu episodes?
Not yet. I'm waiting for a few more to accumulate and then I'm just going to sit down on a rainy day and have a Sailor Moon fest.
Okay.
Awesome.
Well, when's the last time you watched the show, like, raw? Like, well, not raw, but, you know, just subtitled only, straightforward.
Oh, goodness. Quite a while ago, actually. Probably 7 years or so.
Okay, so it'll act. So it's not like one of those things you revisit all the time. So
not the, this is a little weird, but not necessarily the subtitle ones. Occasionally I'll pop in the old Deke Dub tape to work to, because I know it so well.
Okay. Well, I'm curious.
Can you recite the lines?
Probably.
Nice.
I can certainly do all of the attacks.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to your review of the Hulu episodes then, I guess. that'll be fun to read. So let's get into it. This is supposed to be a manga episode, and we're not talking about manga, so let's do that. I want to know what you guys have been reading, what you're into, good and bad, everything. So, Rebecca, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, I think my biggest recent surprise was Monster Musume, which I did not expect to like in the slightest. I reviewed it because someone read my review of Centaur's Life and said, oh, you should review this. And I, okay, what the hell? And while it does have a lot of gratuitous fan service that I don't know, people may argue with me, I didn't think it was strictly necessary, and I don't understand why he put screen tone on the boobs and nothing else. That was really weird. Like, are they a different color because they're monsters? What's going on? But it was a surprisingly good story, and just he really clearly thought out how all of the different monsters worked on a physical level in the human world, and maybe put a little too much thought into it in some cases. But it was kind of delightful, and I was shocked. That was my surprise. I fully expected to love What Did You Eat Yesterday, and yeah, I was not disappointed. Have you read that one, Deb?
I have. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I just got my hands on the second volume today, and I'm looking forward to it. And I really admired how Fumi Yoshinaga got into some of the lesser-known, lesser acknowledged facets of life. Not necessarily even just LGBT life, but where she tied the whole story about the woman who abused the husband.
Oh.
You just don't hear about that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was impressed that she included it. Even Law and Order barely touches it. I'm still slogging through every Alice release that comes out. I think I have a problem.
I'm glad you're buying them.
I am. It's really not a...
That's single-handedly probably keeping Seven Seas in pink.
I think it is, and they're taking some more chances, like Crimson Empire, which I didn't particularly like, but I appreciate that they brought it out. That weird fairy tale and dictatorial grimoire. I had mixed feelings there because, as I've mentioned before in the forums, I teach classes on fairy tales. So that was a little special from a folklore perspective.
Oh my. How so?
Yeah. Well, by changing the genders, they sort of negated the original meanings of the stories. Like Little Red Riding Hood in its early forms is basically a rape allegory.
And
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's, well, the earliest version, she does a striptease for a werewolf and runs home naked through the woods. And that wasn't acceptable later on, so she gets the red cap and she gets eaten all up. And there's a whole lot of academic stuff that goes with that, about women being willing participants because of what they wear. But so making her Little Red Riding Hood into a buff guy toting, I think he had knives, was a little strange. And Snow White being a guy didn't really, I don't think it did much to change the story except to say, look, here's Snow White, and he's a guy in hot pants. Isn't that neat?
Wait, what is this again?
Dictatorial grimoire.
Oh my gosh.
It's really something else.
This is from Seven Seas as well?
Yes, it is. And when I first started reading it, I could have sworn it would be based on an Otome game, but no, it's its own special thing.
Wow. See, I'm not on their review list, so a lot of their stuff flies completely, is under the radar for me. I've really got to work on that.
Do they even have a review list?
I don't think so. I just buy them because that's one of the local bookstore here actually gets them, so it's always exciting.
You're a sport.
Well, or stupid. I haven't figured it out yet.
There's so many other things I want to buy with my actual money that I don't, you know, like feel really super obligated to pick those up unless someone like you says, you know what, it's actually worth it.
Yeah, well, some of them are worth it. Some of them are just weird. But, you know, books and vet bills, that's pretty much what I spend my money on. Got to keep the dog in Prozac. She was a very badly abused stray, and Prozac lets her sleep with both eyes closed.
Oh, my.
Yeah, poor little thing.
Getting dark. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Yes. More books. Let me think what else I've been reading. I guess it's a later release, but I recently found Gold Pollen and Other Stories, which Picture Box released. Mm. It's a collection of short stories by Seichi Hayashi they were all released in the 60s and 70s. And I had never encountered anything quite like them before. And that was really interesting. Though I guess they are no longer doing that line, which is unfortunate.
Picture Box decided to stop releasing new books at the end of December. Although, you know, they did put out, I mean, I think they did a good job of putting out, you know, stuff from the past that a lot of publishers generally don't touch because the conventional wisdom is anything before 1990 is, you know, not worth picking up, if not 2000.
Which is really too bad. I love reading in Italian because I can get the Italians love to put out the earlier stuff. Like I just read the first two volumes of Attack Number One, which is a shoujo manga from, I believe it was 1968, about volleyball.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. Really teeny little panels and very stiff art, but the enthusiasm that comes off the page is really impressive. So that was a good find. And then I found also in Italian, Ryoko Ikeda's Elizabeth, which is a biography of Elizabeth I.
Oh, wow.
That was really, it was very fanciful. I think it would make history majors cry, but I teach college, I was thinking in majors, but it was...
What kind of liberties did she take with history in that one, by the way?
Well, she went with Elizabeth was, had a lover, Robin Dudley, I think, I can't remember precisely. She did show Henry VIII as, young and attractive at one point, which I give her credit for, but that he was, she tampered with his character a lot. But it was, I feel like it was based more off the Elizabeth film with Cate Blanchett than it was off history.
Was it a recent release?
Yes, it's a more recent release.
Oh, interesting. So she's still very active then?
Yes. Or, I don't know, very, but she's certainly still producing things.
That's excellent.
Yeah, it was good. It was beautiful. Her art is always lovely.
That's interesting that it feels like an adaptation of that movie. Like, I wonder if it'll move in, because that had a sequel that was really, really pretty, but also really, really empty, and didn't seem like it was based in much of historical fact at all. So I'm wondering if that goes on, if it'll get into the Golden Age stuff. That's funny.
That could be.
That's one of the nice things about history, right?
Right.
Yeah. You can always play with it if you're the victor, I suppose.
Right. Indeed.
I recently finished Higurashi, and that was, I really enjoyed that.
Okay, so that's over now, right? That's done?
Yes, that is now done.
And only 15 different story arcs and 50 billion volumes and...
Something like that, yes. And they keep going back and fixing little things and see how much he picked up in each arc as they do the new ones. So that was, my sister is a game designer, and she just ate that up.
Oh, wow.
I'm slogging through Umineko. I don't like it nearly as much, so I'm assured that it gets better.
I have not picked that one. I have not gone through it. It's been on my to-read pile for a while, but it's just this big, thick thing that made me go, ugh.
Yeah.
I think I'll read Kimi ni Korake. Ha, ha, ha.
Little thin shoujo book, yes. did you read Devil and Her Love Song, Deb?
Yes, I did.
What did you think of the ending?
I just thought it could have ended several volumes ago. Mm-hmm. It just seemed to go on and on and on. And it's like,
yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, she just kind of ended up with that guy she's always liked since volume one.
Yeah. And it didn't feel really very conclusive, though. I mean, he was off someplace and she might have ended up with someone else later.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like Hana Yori Dango, right? Boys Before Flowers, yeah. Where it's like this, you know, this long, you know, the couple goes through so many tribulations, things that keep them apart, and at the end you're like, and then together. And you're like, no, come on! Sorry, spoiler. I should have said a spoiler.
It's been out for a while. It's like Romeo and Juliet die in Act 5. Sorry, guys.
I guess, you know, in some respect, it's like, you know, they're in high school and, you know, it's its own happy ending that, oh, you know, they're off going off and having their lives and, you know, they're still kind of connected in some way. And it's like, okay, that's not what I was looking for, but okay.
Right. So if I were still in high school, I might feel differently, I think. I mean, we take these out of the target audience quite a bit.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, it's like Mayuko Ano was... I guess at TCAF this year,
mm-hmm.
And she was talking about she used to do shoujo manga, and then she said after a while she realized relationships aren't like that, and she just got fed up and just started doing her own thing.
I have my moments where I'm like, really, this is not how high school was. What are you thinking about?
But you know, neither is Archie Comics like high school either, so.
Exactly. Well, Archie must be the world's oldest teenager at this point.
He probably is.
Yeah. Oh, I still pick him up at Free Comic Book Day every year.
Well, that's good. They're doing all kinds of weird stuff with that, I must say.
Yes, they definitely are. Some of my students were talking about that. I think what else exciting I have been reading? I finally got into the Crunchyroll manga, and I discovered A Silent Voice.
I love that one. That's on my list, too.
Yeah, that is so good. It's about a boy who was a bully to a deaf girl when they were in elementary school, and then everything turns around on him and he becomes the bullying victim. Then years later, they're seniors in high school, they meet up again, and he's trying to come to terms with what he did and how he was treated. And it feels like a very realistic depiction of what it feels like, what bullying does to you.
It's really well drawn too, and it's, I think it's really sensitively told. It doesn't really, you know, like With the Light, that autism comic, mm-hmm. which was kind of preachy, honestly, because it had a point to make. This, on the other hand, feels like it's part of the plot, but it's not the plot.
Right.
It's an aspect of the characters, but it's not, they're not trying to make this point like, you have to respect deaf people, or, you know, this is how hard it is to be deaf. Have some empathy, people. Mm-hmm. It's just a really well-told story with some good characters, and it's really engaging. I passed it on to a friend of mine, a former coworker whose daughter is deaf, partially deaf. I gave her like a Crunchyroll pass and said, you know, please have your daughter read this, and, you know, I think you'd really enjoy it. And she came back to me and said, oh my God, this is great.
Yeah.
And it's not a manga read at all.
I wish there was a print edition. I would love to use it in classrooms, just like distribute it to libraries. Please read this. Have this in your collection.
I sure hope someone picks it up, because I think it is really well done.
It is. If Wandering Sun can find a print edition audience, then I see no reason why this couldn't.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be speaking at a library conference at the end of June, and honestly, I would have loved to have recommended this book, because I think it should be in libraries. It's pretty much teen friendly. There's nothing beyond the pale. No fan service. It's very accessible, even if you don't normally read manga.
Right.
But, you know, right now it's just digital, so sorry.
Yeah. Gotta get a Crunchyroll subscription, guys, and read it that way, I guess.
Mm.
I feel like it can go beyond just people who are deaf in its audience necessarily. I was bullied in high school and middle school, and the feelings are really familiar. I'm not sure of the gender of the author.
Yoshitoki, I'm not sure. That could be male or female, but I'm gleaning towards male.
I was too, actually. Not sure why, but anyway, the author, the mangaka, really just pinpoints the feelings. I think that's one of its greatest strengths.
Okay, well, things we learned about Deb, annoyed by being asked to feel empathy for autistic people.
Not for 6 super thick volumes.
I'm just kidding. Well, so as usual, Rebecca, when I say, so what have you been reading? It's 2 hours explanation.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, hey, that's why, you know, that's why you're ANN's number one manga critic. I mean, crikey.
Holy.
So, Deb, what's on your plate?
You know, I mean, like I said, I went to Toronto Comic Art Festival, and so a lot of things I purchased there or read there are kind of on the top of my pile right now. This year was really great because we had 3 manga artists, actually technically 4. It was Miyoko Ano, who has did Insufficient Direction, as well as Sakuran, and as well as several titles that are now available on Crunchyroll Manga, like Memoirs of Amorous Gentlemen and Buffalo 5 Girls. There was also FM there. She did the Red Blinds the Foolish, and then Tableau number 20 is out now in print from Sublime. And Akira Himekawa, who are 2 women, they do the Legend of Zelda manga, and they also have a new title called, I think, Yuana and... oh gosh, I wish I wrote it down. It's about a Native American boy coming of age, and it's on Amimaru Manga, which is a Facebook manga platform. I'll get to that later. But, you know, those are the ones. And then I picked up a few other things, like Caveman Goo by Jiraiya is about a manga. It's like a little floppy pamphlet. It's a really funny short story about a burly caveman who decides he wants to have babies, but he's been stepping men all this time. And he tells his male friend, like, hey, I can't wait to have babies with you. And the guy goes, don't be silly. We can't have babies. And so then he goes off and tries to find a girl to do it with. And then, well, it doesn't work out for very funny reasons. But it's really cute because the other bottom manga is Gengoro Tagame, who was also a TCAP guest last year. His stuff is really dark, really... you know, hardcore BDSM, and I'm talking super hardcore. Like, it makes when you think you've seen it all, there's Gengoro Tagame and his electrodes. But you know, so I picked up that Caveman Goo is like a little short story, but it's going to be included in Massive, which is a collection of bottom manga that's being put out by Fantagraphics later this year.
Right.
I enjoyed it a lot. What else I read? Food Wars, Sokugeki no Soma. That's the new Shonen Jump series. Because, well, it's food. it's kind of funny because I was reading that and reading What Did You Eat Yesterday and another bento comic. And Sokugeki no Soma is, I don't know this for a fact, but was it drawn by like someone who previously did porno manga? Because the way that they react over eating really good food is they look like they're having an orgasm. It's really strange.
Well, is that the joke, though? I mean, is that...
I think it is.
Right.
So I guess that's what makes it a Shonen Jump title. It's pretty goofy. Let's see. What else am I reading? I'm reading Showa by Shigeru Mizuki. Have you seen that one yet?
I've seen it. I actually got the free Comic Book Day sample, and it definitely made me want to pick up the whole book.
Yeah, it's going to be a whole series. Right now the second volume is out, but it basically follows, he's basically explaining the history of Japan from, say, the turn of the century to now. And he has a really interesting, it's very dense historical stuff, but it's really fascinating. He doesn't apologize for Japan at all. He points out all the ways that, you know, the war was dumb. World War II was dumb, and Japan's role in it was horrible. But it's very readable and very engaging. We're talking about fudging with history. I don't think he does that here. It's really, it's a big, thick book, and it's not for everyone, but I think it is worth reading. Other things I've been reading, like Vinland Saga, I like that a lot. I think I mentioned it the last time. Because it's Vikings, and it's really well written. That's from Kodansha. That's the same artist who did Planetes. And I guess I've been reading a bunch of the Crunchyroll manga titles as well. There is a new one called Tenth Prism by Masahito Soda. He did Firefighter, Daigo of Company M. This is more of a fantasy adventure story about a young, a reluctant prince who doesn't want to, you know, reclaim his old kingdom, but then the fate makes him, lights a fire under him, and now he's off on a quest. And the two Moyoko Ano titles on there, Memoirs of Amorous Gentlemen and Buffalo Five Girls, which is almost like, when you put that together with Sakuran, it's like a trilogy of prostitute life. You know, Memoirs of Amorous Gentlemen is set in Paris, in a brothel in Paris. Buffalo Five Girls is set in the, I guess, what seems like a mishmash of the Old West and Modern West, American West. And of course, Sakuran is set in Japan. So she definitely has an interest in telling women's stories from that point of view. And Ajin, Demi-Human, that's also on Crunchyroll Manga, and that's going to come up from Vertical in the fall. That's an interesting suspense sci-fi series about a race of semi-indestructible humans and some mysterious creature beings that are behind all that. It's hard to describe without totally spoiling it, so I would just say go pick it up. And, you know, the lighter stuff like My Little Monster. Have you read that?
Yes. Oh, that's just delightful.
That's a really cute shoujo manga from Kodansha by Rubiko. Yeah, that's just really fun. You know, it turns shoujo manga tropes on its ear a little bit, but doesn't totally, you know, turn it upside down. You know, the girl's like really hardcore studying type person, and she meets this guy who's kind of quirky, and he's very eccentric, and he immediately likes her. But then as you discover more things about him, he's not what you think he is. He's not a total goofball. So the dynamics of the relationship is really fun to read. They have the anime on Crunchyroll as well, but I'm enjoying the manga quite a bit, as well as, what is it? What's that one? The other shoujo manga from Kodansha.
Do you remember? I Love You?
Yes. That one I liked a lot too. But, you know, shoujo is always my first love.
magical girls for me.
And I think that's a good list. Oh, and have you read Nijigahara Holograph?
No, I haven't.
That's really good. That's a done-in-one horror comic by Asano Inio, who did Solanin.
Oh, yeah.
It's way creepier than Solanin, but it's really good.
That sounds right up my alley. I'll have to pick it up.
Anyway, did we go on for 2 hours again?
No, it's great. It's great. I, you know, it's why I have you guys on, because you consume, and that's... That's what we want here. I haven't really been reading a lot of manga lately. The only thing I managed to dig into a little bit... I mean, I'm keeping up with Attack on Titan as Kodansha releases it and sends it to me.
Have you read the side stories ones, like the Before the Fall?
No, Hope did. Well, I mean, she took a look at... what is it? Attack on Titan Junior High or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, that's pretty goofy.
Yeah, I didn't read that stuff. I could not care less about a prequel to that story. Like, it's interesting enough on its own. I don't need to know what happened. Well, what about before anything interesting happened? I don't care. Like, I'm gonna stick with the main story here.
Well, there's more too coming too.
I know.
There's one with what is it? The two guys. Shush. I'm sorry. It's been a while since I've read it because.
Yeah, there's plenty coming. But the only other thing I dug into was Vinland Saga.
What'd you think of that, by the way?
I was pretty bored by it, gotta be honest. I know. But, you know, so here's the thing. Like, I'm a huge fan of, like, dumb historical action movies. So, you know, this comic derives a lot of its... At least it's aesthetic from those films. Mm. And I found it to be a little dull in its execution compared to those movies. Mostly I was sitting there reading it going, well, why don't I just put on Kingdom of Heaven or, you know, Gladiator or something. Like, I'm gonna get this except in motion and it's going to be more exciting. I do kind of want to read more. It wasn't, like, boring to the point where I wasn't compelled to continue, but I just felt it moved a little slow. Like, thing you know is going to happen takes 100 pages for it to happen. And
Did you read volume 2 yet?
No, I'm like, well, okay, so we should clarify. These are giant volumes.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're double-sized.
Yeah, so it took me a while. You know, I spent an afternoon going through the first one, and I'm curious to see more, but I think it's going to be a you know, when I have a boring Sunday afternoon, I might make it even more boring with some more Vinland Saga, I guess. No, it's not. I'm joking. But I've got, like, three of them sitting here. So, you know, I'll probably read more. But I think I wish it moved a little faster. And it feels like they telegraphed the story pretty hard. So... kind of know what's going to happen already, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but
You haven't got to the horse punching scene yet.
I don't think so.
That's good shit. It does start moving a little faster.
I'll look forward to that. The other thing I checked out was the Viz Comics All You Need Is Kill adaptation. Because I have to read the book and then I have to review the film. And the comic was fine. It's kind of weird that it's drawn by American artists. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. It's all Americans that worked on it. You know, aside from being
the Japanese adaptation, the one that's running in Shonen Jump now for the same story.
I think so. Yeah, but the one that I read was the full color one that they were free samples of it on Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, right.
It's that one. And it's a good, like, that's a neat story. I'll admit it's a neat story. I'm about a third of the way through the novel, which is a quick read. Like, it's only a couple hundred pages. And I'm actually looking forward to the film. I think it's a neat idea for a story, and so far so good. I didn't really have that big of a problem with it. The comic's kind of weird because you're picking it up and it's like, okay, this is a Japanese story, this is a Japanese novel, and there is a manga, but this isn't the manga, this is a American adaptation of the manga. but it's not a direct adaptation of the film. It's called All You Need Is Kill, not Edge of Tomorrow, which is the rename for the American version. Whatever, it's kind of weird, but I didn't have a big problem with it. I think it is a really neat idea for a story, which is, you know, guy relives the same day over and over and over and over and over again, reliving his death at the hands of these aliens that are invading Earth. And it's a neat idea for a story. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend running out and buying the it's a floppy, like really thin trade that they put out. Wouldn't necessarily recommend running on getting that. Maybe get the novel instead, because if you just want to read, you know, the original version, that's the way to go. But if you're interested in it, yeah, get the novel, I would say. That's about it. Not a lot's coming out right now that's really capturing my interest. I actually just got rid of like a whole bunch of just random volumes I had laying around, and because I just had a shelf of just random volumes.
Oh dear, like volume 20-something something?
Yeah, stuff, you know, basically like stuff that would get sent in to be reviewed that Rebecca would have already, she does this to me all the time, she'll buy it before I could send it to her. So, like, I'll just have it sitting here, and so I had a friend who was like, I'll take it off your hands, so I just put it in a big, big box and just shoved it off to her. But going through that stuff, like, God, there were old Del Rey books in there, like...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really old. There was some ADV manga in the back of that. Yeah, like really old shit. But it was interesting sort of combing through that. That's sort of the extent of my my manga experience lately. I keep meaning to get around to reading One Punch Man, which everybody keeps telling me is really fun.
It is fun. You should pick it up.
Yeah, so I think that's maybe next on my list. So we got a bunch of Twitter questions. So let's get to those.
Okay.
Let's see here. Oh, wait. Before we do that.
Okay.
That was something else I wanted to talk about. So, Deb, you recently basically went on Twitter and asked a question, and I kind of want you to pose the question, because you're going to do a better job than I am of explaining exactly what it is we're getting into here.
Okay. I asked two questions, actually, and I'm not sure which one you want me to address.
Sure.
But... one was, what would make manga more appealing to non-manga readers? And the other one was, bringing manga over in English, what is the most important thing to you? When people say cheap, fast, good, but you can only have two.
Yeah.
So the question was, out of four, which would you like? Would you like quality translations? Would you like it released faster? Would you like color pages? What was the third one? Let me pull up the question again. Color pages. Wait one second. Yeah. Lower price, quality translation, color pages, or faster release of the English version. Is that the question you wanted?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Because you got a lot of data on this.
Yeah, I'm still compiling it because I got a ton of responses. To back up a little bit, the reason why I asked this is because one of the panels that I moderated at Toronto Comic Art Festival was with Yohei Sadoshima. He is a former manga editor with Kodansha. He edited a lot of Miyoko Ono's work as well as Space Brothers. He started a new literary agency where he is directly representing a handful of manga artists as well as Japanese authors. And in our conversation, we were talking about, you know, the future of manga publishing. And one thing that, you know, that came up over and over again in that weekend as I was talking with people from Japan is they seem to think that all they need to do is publish manga in full color pages and it would be more popular. At which point I was like, what?
That's
not the most important thing. So I threw it out there. I said, okay, fans, what do you say? What's the most important to you? Would you buy more manga if it was lower price per volume? Or do you care more about if the translation is good? Or would color pages make you want to buy it more? Or is it more important to you that it just be out the same faster, as close as possible to the Japanese release date? And the vast majority of the responses said, translation is number one. Has to be a good translation. Second is faster release. Third is lower price, perhaps. And color pages was dead last.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that was interesting because people were willing to say, okay, if I'd be willing to pay a little more for better translation if it came down to it.
Right.
And, you know, the faster release thing, you know, is very important, but not as important as rushing it out and getting a crappy translation. I did get some, there was, you know, I think that was the combination that I heard the most. The second highest combination of, you know, priorities would be faster release, quality translation, then lower price, then color. A few outliers said color was the most important thing to them, but they were vastly outnumbered by all the others.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, the context behind this question is not necessarily hidden, but it wasn't directly asked.
Mm.
But it was sort of like, what's going to get you to buy books instead of just reading scans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
And, you know, I don't read scans, but I have read scans, and they fucking suck.
To put it mildly.
They're terrible. And I get that you're getting sort of an idea of what happens in the story. Like, that's kind of, you know, it's like shitty old fan subs, where they do it so quickly, and it's oftentimes translated from Japanese into Chinese and then into English or whatever. That happens, you know, that happened all the time back in the old fan sub days. It's happening now with scans. Because people make a lot of money on scans because they run pirate sites that for some reason don't get cracked down on. But that's kind of what, that was sort of the crux of the question really was like, what's going to get you to buy books?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least buy digitally.
Right,
and,
right.
To me, like, quality translation, well, that's got to be number one, right? Because the scans translations are terrible. Like, I've never, and again, I don't read them, but I have read them. Uh-huh. Like, I've looked through them a few times just to see what they were like. And the translation is always awful. All it does is give you sort of a sketch of what the story is supposed to be. You get an idea of what the dialogue maybe is supposed to mean. But you don't get, like, a nuanced, professional, polished translation.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a generation of teenagers reading these things and thinking that those garbage, rushed, shitty translations are the real one. And somehow it's like the actual professional translations, those are the fraud.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Which is fucking awful. Like, that's just the worst.
Well, that's not unlike the fan who wanted Serena back, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But overwhelmingly, that's what you found that people wanted to pay for was a translation.
Yeah, I mean, I could, you know, my obviously this little poll was not scientific. You
yeah,
know,
of
I mean,
course not.
People who tend to follow me on Twitter tend to be aware of the issues of manga publishing. They tend to be very aware of manga and understand Japanese culture at least more than I say the average person who walks into a bookstore. But, you know, it's, I thought it was interesting that people really cared about that much.
Yeah.
I think that's good, you know, but at the same time, I did probe Sadoshima-san about, you know, his take on digital publishing, because a lot of the titles that are on Crunchyroll manga are from his artists, like Investor Z is by one of the artists he represents, Hirofusi Mita, I know his last name is Mita. Which, by the way, is another manga I've been reading, and it's really fascinating. It's about investing in stocks and economics, but it's utterly gripping. So much fun. I mean, there's this thing where the schoolgirl's like idolizing Warren Buffett, and he's on a white horse, and she's a princess, and he's a prince. It's hilarious. But anyway, his thing was like, oh, you know, I just want to get this stuff out as much as possible, you know, and... but you guys want quality translation, and we want to do that too. And I told him, come on, that kind of doesn't add up, okay?
Right.
Quality translation does cost money, you know? So how are you going to, you know, get better translation if you're not making any money off of this?
Yeah, the person who can give you the quality translation, their time is worth money. The skill is worth money. Like, just because some asshole is willing to do a bad job for free doesn't mean that the person who is good at that job should also have to do it for free.
Yes.
Like, it's really pretty ridiculous. But that Color Pages stuff blows my mind. Like, has anyone ever given a shit about Color Pages in manga? Like, I certainly have never.
I even prefer it in black and white because there's a clarity, and it's designed. That's how it was created for, you know? I mean, there's just a handful of, you know, like there's a color edition now of Dragon Ball that Viz is putting out. I have nothing against it, but I wasn't exactly crying out for it to be in color.
Were you really crying out for Dragon Ball at all?
Well, no. It is interesting in and of itself, but no, I'm not a big, huge, huge fan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Every time there's Color Pages at the beginning of something, it's always... usually it's like... from my experience, it's Color Pages of something that happens later. Like, it's a couple of pages they just decided to colorize and stick at the beginning. Or it's sort of a prologue with information that's not really all that necessary.
Yeah.
So what it's taught me is those Color Pages aren't necessary for the story. So it's kind of...
I mean, if it was originally in the Japanese magazine with a few Color Pages, and they do have that... then it's great. I'm really grateful when publishers like, you know, like Yen does this. I think Kodansha does this. When the color pages are available, they'll publish them in color, not in like a muddy grayscale. But, you know, to think that, you know, that you need to go through this whole process of colorizing manga like the original, like the Akira releases back in the day that Marvel did.
Right.
Where they colorized all the pages of Akira by, you know, by a well-known a Western comics colorist, of course, but, you know, in an attempt to make it more palatable to Western readers.
Right.
But I don't see that as being worth the effort, honestly.
No.
No.
I mean...
No, a couple of color pages at the beginning are sometimes, they feel like a bonus, especially if it's a splash page, but otherwise, I'd rather have the black and white.
All right, well, it's interesting, you know, once you're sort of done sifting through all of those responses, I'm curious to see, like, the end result. Like,
I'll post it this week, because I've just been kind of, like, tallying up the votes, because I was surprised at how much response I got to that question.
Okay, let's get to these Twitter questions. Got a lot of them. Okay. Ooh, this is a tough one. Anything Plus More asks, which is better, Monster Pluto or 20th Century Boys?
Oh, that's easy. Pluto. Oh.
Yeah, I was going to say Pluto.
How about you, Rebecca?
Well, I kind of like Monster better.
Yeah?
Well, you're wrong. Get out.
No, leave me alone.
I'm joking, of course.
Well, Monster's being reissued, isn't it, in end of the year, so that it won't be as hard to find.
Yes, I'm very excited for that.
Yeah. I mean, those are all masterpieces, so it's like, pick which one of your children is best.
That's right.
I mean, for some people, maybe that's an easy question to answer, but I'm just, you know, anyway. Okay, who is the Mass Tuxedo asks, have your reading habits changed with the addition of Crunchyroll, Manga Box, and Comic Walker?
Well, I haven't read Manga Box, and I haven't checked out anything on Comic Walker, because the stuff that they have in English, I've already read in English, for the most part. But Crunchyroll, yes, I mean... The Crunchyroll manga assortment, while a relatively tight assortment, I do find some gems in there, and I really like a lot. In fact, several of the recommendations I made earlier were from there.
I'm trying to get better about reading digital, I never would have read A Silent Voice if I hadn't made an effort. But to be pretty old fashioned, I do prefer the print editions. And I'm more likely to go out of my way to find a difficult-to-find print edition than I am to comb a digital database.
Right. I still don't use any of those digital services.
I really don't like how siloed it all is, though, you know, that you have to go to different sites to find things.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's going to be for a while, I think. I don't think, I mean, hopefully Crunchyroll can pull all this stuff together, but... you know, Viz isn't necessarily going to give Crunchyroll a whole bunch of shit, you know, so you have
or Comixology for that matter either.
Yeah, right. So, you know, you have one major player and you have people who are good at consolidation. These two interests, business-wise, don't necessarily meet. The business interest has to meet in order for consolidation to really happen. Right now, forget it.
Yeah, it's just too fragmented right now. I mean, there's some that are only, like that Amimaru site, which I mentioned, has a handful of titles that aren't available anywhere else. But you have to go through their Facebook page, which is, and you have to pay with Facebook money. It's like, irritating.
I've seen a little crossover in titles between e-manga and Renta, but that's really the only thing I've noticed in terms of consolidation.
Mm.
And Renta's mostly a lot of smutty Jose manga, which has its place, but so if that's what you're looking for, go to Renta.
That's good to know.
All right, related question. Invalid Name asks, is Comic Walker already in trouble? Since launch, many titles haven't updated, and there are no updates scheduled.
You can edit this question, this response out, Zach, but do you have a response? Do you have a direct contact with someone at Kadokawa? Because I can't get anyone to answer my email there.
Oh, no, I don't.
Shit. I'm wondering myself. I mean, Comic Walker is something I really want to get more information about. I want to ask these questions like, how are you going to release stuff? How often are you going to release stuff? How often are you going to add new titles? What are you planning to do? You know, like there's so many questions I want to ask as a reader and as someone who's trying to report on this that are not answered. And I'll be blunt. Some of the translations of the titles that have not been published in English by a print publisher, they're terrible. Mm-hmm. Their UX on that site makes me cringe.
Yikes.
So, I mean, it's not as bad as Square Enix. I mean, Square Enix was the apex of horrible, hugely funded online manga sites. And thankfully now, you know, it's with Yen is handling most of it.
So you're not impressed with Comic Walker.
Well, it's better than it. Better. It's there's some improvements. Yeah, better than some. But I'm just kind of frustrated that like that question, like the person who posed that question, that, you know, for a site that's trying to reach a worldwide audience, they're not really communicating that well with a worldwide audience with what their plans are.
All right. Well, we'll see. All right. Here. XP Sane asks, do you think that Crunchyroll's exclusive digital licenses hurts or helps titles with physical publishers that can do the same? That can do digital.
You want to tackle that one first? Otherwise, I can.
Go ahead.
Go for it.
No. You know, no one's really saying it, so I guess on the record. But I kind of get the sense that it makes some print publishers uncomfortable. That Crunchyroll publishes a title in digital first before their print edition can come out. I don't know whether, like we were talking about A Silent Voice and how wonderful it is and how wonderful it would be if it was in print. But I'm kind of sometimes left to wonder, like, is it being on Crunchyroll digital somehow an impediment to it being published in print?
Okay, so I just got to step in here and say, once again, we see that the manga industry is a couple years behind the anime industry and goes through the exact same shit that the anime industry... That question that you're posing, the exact same question that every single anime company asked when streaming started getting big was, isn't this going to reduce the value of my physical product? Mm-hmm. And it turns out, no, but it depends on the title, and you have to get really, really smart about what you put on shelves and what you leave digital.
Right.
It just means you have to adapt. You know, manga's inherently, I think, more disposable than... Well, maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this, but I do think it is a little bit more disposable than, you know, a TV show. you read it very, very fast, and sometimes all you care about is just getting that digital, you know, digital 30 pages, digital 100 pages, and you're done with it. And that's it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that applies to TV shows, too. But a lot of people, they watch a 12-episode show, and then they want a physical copy of it.
Sure.
Some people, you read a 4 volumes of something, and you're like, that was cute. I don't need to own it. But there's so right. much more manga than there is anime that, you know, I think you're looking at two different markets. But I think the rule still applies. Yeah, that stuff being available digitally is going to reduce the demand for a physical copy. But what it means is you curate harder. And you specifically find the titles that you think have a market for a physical release, and you release those instead. And it really just helps you make more money in the long run.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, digital, like I said, digital doesn't serve a large market, which is libraries, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a huge source. And then there's people like, Rebecca, you've mentioned this a couple times, and I feel like this too. It's like, sometimes I just find it easier to read it in print.
Right.
More pleasurable.
That's right. And for those of us who are book collectors, there's something just really wonderful about having it and knowing you can go back to it mm-hmm. and say, oh, what happened on this page? Well, I can flip back to the exact spot, whereas you can't do that as easily with a digital copy.
And digital still has that issue, which we're all painfully aware of, that, you know, when the site goes poof, so does your stuff.
That's right. Whereas I can still hold on to my weird old ADV copies of, I don't know, Kid's Joker.
Which has to be worth at least, $10
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of growing pains. I don't know what the answer is going to be in the end, because I think Japan's figuring out themselves, too.
Okay, EA Phone Home asks, I've been reading Vertical's Gundam The Origin. Can you suggest any realistic war or political drama manga titles? Well, Eagle comes to mind, but good luck finding it, I guess.
Well, if you want hardcore realism, go read Showa.
Yeah.
Or yeah. You can read Onward Towards Our Noble Deaths. Or if they want more strategic type things, political intrigue, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, Raijin used to publish a couple of titles that had a lot of real political intrigue, but they've been gone for a while.
Also, I wouldn't necessarily go to Gundam for realistic war or political drama.
No, there is that.
But there is a certain density of the storytelling that, you know, you can't just read it in, you know, 5 minutes, go, next one.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's chunky.
Yeah. Jason just wrote up this weird Mahjong manga that had a lot of political sort of satire in it. On House of a Thousand Manga. That sounded really interesting. I didn't go after it, but I might track it down at some point. I think you're more likely to find satire or heightened stuff than, like, serious, realistic political drama. You know.
There's always Gogol 13.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, isn't Master Keaton getting a release?
Oh, you're right. Master Keaton is coming out at the end of the year, and that's another one by Urasawa. I think that would fit the bill, don't you think? But,
sure.
I mean, without the giant robots.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay. Aaron Sarais asks, thoughts on that Sailor Moon Tumblr, which Debbie brought up earlier, and other naysayers of new releases of the Sailor Moon manga and anime?
Get a life?
Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoy all of it.
The only thing I have to say to those people is all of those choices that you're seeing. I know that back in the day, the show was cut apart and changed around a lot by American interests. Pretending like that is still happening now is living in the past, and it's not true. There's no truth to it. The truth is that everything that you see is approved by Takeuchi. So stop pretending like it's the 90s and there's some guy in an office saying, kids won't understand what this is, change it to this. That is not happening anymore. That's not the case.
Sailor Moon says.
Yeah, there's no more Sailor says. Like, that's done. Just stop pretending. It's like people who come in and go, dubs suck. Remember One Piece for kids? Yes, From 10 years ago, yes. I remember that's also the last time anything like this really happened. So let's all get the fuck over it and stop pretending like that shit still goes on.
Well, you know, it's kind of like sometimes I feel like they're like climate change deniers, you know?
Yeah, right. You know, with less totally lethal, horrible impact on the rest of us, yes.
Of course, yes, yes. Let's keep that in perspective.
Like, those climate change deniers dictate legislation in some cases, so it's not quite as deadly. Right. But, yeah, anyway.
But the fervor in which they stick to something that is patently false.
Yeah, yeah.
Is frightening.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Your friend and mine and former Super Manga Pal, Ed Sizemore, asks, any chance you're going to make Otakon 2 years in a row, or is once a decade enough? No, I'm not going to Otakon this year. Once a decade might be enough. I like that show. I don't like Baltimore. They're moving to DC in like 3 or 4 years. That's probably when I'll return to Otakon. Still working in this business in 3 or 4 years, I'll definitely go to the one that's in D.C., mostly because I've never been to Washington, D.C., and I always wanted to. So, yeah.
That's a good excuse.
No more Baltimore, though. That's it. Hope and I went last year, and the show itself was fine, but the experience of going there was terrible. So, we're not doing it again. Okay. All right, here's a solid question. Jarvis Gray asks, do any of you guys have a favorite font?
Oh, how about you, Rebecca?
Oh, I don't know. I like my own handwriting.
I like any script font that's not all in all caps.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I'm a really boring graphic designer. I tend to use a lot of Helvetica Nui.
Right, like everyone does, yeah.
Yeah, you know, what the hell. I mean, the main thing is it's readable.
Right. Alternatively, what's some of the worst typesetting you've seen in manga? Scans.
Well, there was that example that I think, when I was talking about Spanish translation, I think Shori sent an example of a Spanish version of Sailor Moon where the typesetting was so bad, like, it wasn't, the font choice was horrible, and they didn't even bother to keep the words within the bubble. Like, they kept going outside of the bubble borders, and it's like, whoa, that's beyond the pale.
I don't like it when it looks like it was typed on a typewriter, necessarily. I don't know what font that is.
Yeah, or it looked like, or maybe it was old enough that, you know, they pasted on the type, and then it got jiggled around when they finally shot the film. But, yeah, that was pretty bad.
Story Sequence asks, and maybe this is a really good question for Rebecca, any good magical girl manga out there other than Madoka Magica? What about shoujo that breaks with the normal romance formula?
Well, I think that probably both Full Moon and Phantom Thief Jean do a good job. Both Arina Tanimura, she does have the romance element in both of them, but they're, I feel like they both focus more on the heroine really not discovering herself so much as coming to terms with herself and looking at her own power. So I would definitely go with both of those. I like Pretier. It's probably hard to find now because ADV put it out. I don't know if anyone has seen the anime version. It's she's got 7 men that she transforms with. It's a little creepy in some places, but it's supposedly it's Snow White, so I'm not seeing that necessarily, but that's also a really interesting one. It deals a lot with mirror images, so it shouldn't be too hard to find. I'm not sure, but those 3 I would definitely say are good and worth looking into.
Magical girl stuff? You know, actually, I find a lot of magical girl stuff to be deeply disappointing. But and there's not too many new things out. Phantom Thief John is reissued by Viz, so that's nice to pick up. As far as being something that subverts the medium, nothing that or the trope per se, nothing that immediately comes to mind, unfortunately.
Yeah, Othello does some interesting things with magical girl imagery. Though it's not really a magical girl story per se, That was put out by Del Rey quite a few years ago now that I'm thinking back. But if you could find it in a library or secondhand, that one is pretty interesting.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Okay, well, I think that about wraps us up. Again, you guys, thanks for coming on the show. Your expertise is always appreciated. And I look forward to having you on again real soon.
Thanks a lot, Zach.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Deb and Rebecca for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.